Hello, everyone. This is Rob Wolf. Welcome to Amazing Avenue Audio and episode number 5 of Unformettable, where we take a look back at some of the less heralded Mets in our beloved franchise's quirky history, as every player who dons the orange and blue is, in their own way, unformettable to all of us as fans of the team. And quirky will definitely be the byword for today's character. I want to thank everyone out there for their suggestions. They've been fun and random. I've gotten some on the comments on Amazing Avenue and some on Twitter, and they definitely befit the show and its conceit in the random players I've seen named and suggested. So I want to start taking care of a couple of them. They've all been great suggestions. I'm going to try and incorporate pretty much all of them at some point or another. But this particular suggestion was one of my favorites. It's a player I even heard my dad and my uncle mention and remember fondly, which is really saying something when you look at the player's stats and history. So we're going to go back a little ways in time. Just looking at our modern day Mets, I've been very excited lately to see, Brandon Nimmo seems to be turning it around. Brandon Nimmo is, more than notable for being the only Met player to ever be from Wyoming. Today, we're going to take a look at a Met player who's known or remembered for more than being the first and, as far as I know, the only Met player to be from another beautiful southwestern state of Utah. And we're going to be talking about George the Stork Theodore. Now, in 1969, of course, a notable Met year, George Theodore was drafted by the Mets in the 31st round out of Utah. And in a fun anecdote I learned in preparing for this podcast, when the Mets scout came to sign him and asked what it would take to sign him, Theodore replied that, how about a year of grad school? So the Mets paid $3,000 for his year at the University of Utah, where he pursued a psychology degree. And as we'll discuss at the end, he certainly actually did put that to good use after his baseball career was long over. But first, let's just look at his journey to the majors. So again, drafted in 69, he spent 5 years in the minors, from 22 to 25, making his way up from rookie ball to AAA. I guess really put himself on the map in single A and double A in 1971. He hit 28 homers, 114 RBIs, 16 stolen bases over those two seasons. So, the Mets saw a lot of value in this 31st round draft pick. And in 1973, another notable year in Mets history, George the Stork Theodore got the call to the majors. And George became pretty much an instant fan favorite, probably in large part because of that cool nickname and the reason he got it. As you might imagine, he was a taller, ganglier Jacob Rehm. He looked like your physics professor or, I don't know, a taller Charles Nelson Reilly in uniform. He's just got those awkward glasses in every photo you see of him. And, just have to suspect and believe that it was at least in part that non-athletic look that helped endear him to the Shea crowd. And, of course, as we'll discuss, the quirky personality, quirky, lovable personality he displayed. I mean, it certainly wasn't the stats. I mean, he's certainly incredibly fondly remembered for a player who had 192 at-bats with the Mets, hit two homers, batted .219, and had a .567 OPS in his time with the Mets. Mark Fidrich without the talent. Theodore was a real quirky child of the 70s, a great, fun interviewee with a hippie-ish bent and a penchant for quirky quotes. The yearbook noted that he was into astrology and meditation. the back of his 1974 Topps baseball card just simply read, "George likes marshmallow milkshakes," where usually would, have some kind of stats or a draft position as far as information about the player. All of this, I think, combined with the verve and love with which he played the game, really just made him a huge fan favorite despite less than stellar results. Another anecdote. I should actually talk about his playing with the Mets, but he actually pr he kind of prefaced preceded Pedro Serrano. One of his famous quotes was apparently, "I've been trying transcendental meditation, and that helps me be passive and wait on the curve. But I've got to find something else to hit the slider." Maybe you should have tried Jobu. I mean, we know Jobu doesn't help with the curveball, but it never really specified the slider. So anyway, George was a part-time left fielder primarily for the 73 Mets. Played a lot, a decent bit in the beginning of the year. And again, his legend definitely outgrew the playing time he got. He had a fan section called the Storkettes who cheered him on at Shea. And just got outsized reactions from what I've read and what I've heard from my family for being so beloved. But as far as his actual playing, as we said, the results didn't quite match up to the legend of the Stork. Theodore amassed 116 at-bats, 134 plate appearances for the Mets between April 14th. Or 133 of them were between April 14th and July 7th of 1973. And July 7th is unfortunately the date that'll be most remembered. So on that date against the Atlanta Braves, Davey Johnson hit his 21st homer of the year in the fourth inning off of Ray Sadecki. But that home run would not be the most memorable one of the game. No, that would be when Ralph Garr came up to the plate in the seventh inning and lofted a fly ball to left center field. And the Stork and center fielder Don Hahn both went full bore for it and had an unfortunate and quite violent collision that knocked both of them out and dislocated Theodore's hip. Garr got an inside the park home run on the play. Both players had to be taken off the field. Theodore dislocated his hip and missed almost the rest of the season. He actually unbelievably returned September 20th for a one-pinch hitting appearance for that 134th plate appearance during the 1973 season. But the Mets, who were 34 and 45 after that game against the Braves in 1973, as we all know, recovered to make the playoffs that season. And while Theodore did not make an appearance in the NLCS against the Reds, he did get two pinch hitting appearances in the 73 World Series, going 0 for 2. Theodore tried to come back in 74, but seems, by his account, the interviews I've seen with him, he just never fully recovered from the injury. He was really relegated to pinch hitting appearances. He appeared in 60 games, got 76 at bats. He hit one home run, which counted for his one RBI of the year, which, interestingly enough, was the first of a back-to-back-to-back home runs of Theodore, Rusty Staub, and Cleon Jones. Which, at least according to what I've read and haven't been able to verify, was the first time the Mets hit back three consecutive home runs. I don't know if that's I can't back that up, but that is what I read. But that was on July 20th, 1974, and that was the beloved Stork's last RBI as a Met and as a Major League ball player. He, as noted, just he retired after that year. He just felt that the injury, he was not going to recover for it, and seemed clear he didn't have a spot on the Major League roster anymore. But if you're wondering if all that love and adulation for this quirky Stork was well deserved, well, his post-Met career and life is pretty inspiring for anyone, especially for an athlete. He returned to Utah after he retired, where George Theodore got a master's degree in social work, and he apparently worked 38 years with elementary school students, and was named like Salt Lake City's Educator of the Year in 2016. If you go to his Wikipedia page, which obviously I did, to find out what he was up to now, there's a great article from Utah's Deseret News on him that's cited, called "A Champion On and Off the Field." And in another baseball movie reference, it kind of reminded me of that article about Moonlight Graham that woman wrote in Field of Dreams. It, made me a little misty-eyed and made me realize that there's more important things out there than baseball. But yeah, except for the fact that George Theodore is alive still, and isn't crossing over any stones and turning into a ghost or anything. But it was a very lovely article about what seems to be a lovely man and a real beloved Met who, if you don't remember or were too distracted cursing out the way the season and the stadium ended, he was at the farewell to Shea. And got a pretty decent ovation. So I mean, not only was he beloved at the time, but he was certainly remembered, whether for that passion that he played for, or that gangly, awkward, storky, if that guy could make it, hey, maybe I could actually make it kind of look that he had, or whatever he had, that what the French call that certain, I don't know what. George Theodore, George the Stork Theodore, was a legitimately unformidable Met. If you've never heard of him or don't remember him or only knew, scraps that you heard from family like I did, I, encourage you to look some stuff up or just, hopefully this pod has told you what you need to know. But it was fun to read about him, fun to talk about him. I think it was a great suggestion from the audience. I really appreciate it. And as I said, we'll try to revisit a few more before we get into some theme podcasts and try to start syncing up players with games that are upcoming or events in the Mets season this year. And so forth. Thank you very much for listening to Unformidable and Amazing Avenue Audio. Please go to amazingavenue.com for more Mets related content. Follow Amazing Avenue on Facebook, the Twitters, the Instagrams, whatever social media outlet or outlets you prefer. You can find this and all of our amazing podcasts wherever you get your podcasts. Please subscribe. Please leave a review. It really helps, unless you hated it. I guess that review wouldn't help. But anyway, original music on this podcast is by Bunga. I'm on Twitter at WolfRR, WOLFFRR, and the show has its own podcast at Unformidable. Thank you again, and as always,